I am Daryl, compulsive overeater. And gosh, step 10, I remember when the first year I came to program, 1987, and I went to, I came in July, and I went to the OA birthday party the following January. And that was my obviously my first OA birthday party, and people had been giving me sets of tapes of different folks from OA and some people from AA and that. Well, one of the people from OA that I had gotten a set of tapes was a retreat that Bill B had done. And he was kind of a controversial guy, but he was a good guy, and he did a lot of service and in that. And so when I went to the birthday party, I heard that he was speaking on a panel on the second day, and so I decided that I wanted to go to that and listen to him in person. And so I went to it, and they were it was an old timers panel, and so everybody up there was I think four a moderator and I think four speakers, and the speakers all had a minimum of 25 years of abstinence, and they all got up and told how they worked their program and that, and Bill B was the last one, and when he got up there, he started talking about the similarities of how everybody worked their program, those long timers that were up there. And he said, you'll notice there wasn't a whole bunch of similarities except for one thing. And he said, the one thing that they all had in common was that they all did a daily written 10 step. And then that kind of registered with me that this is an important thing. And there have been periods of time when I have done a daily written 10 step, and but not nearly all the time. But I have to say that in the early years for me, I did more 10 steps than I did anything else. When I came to the program, I had a family business that I was running. My dad had retired, and I was the head of the family business, and it was a constant generator of fears and resentments from every angle. And so it was became very obvious to my sponsor right off the bat that that we're going to have to learn. I was going to have to learn how to do 10 steps pretty darn quick, because even though the form and the format was going to be pretty much the same as a four step, I wasn't I couldn't afford to wait for that to happen, because she said I'd just be building up more and more baggage, more resentments and more fears and that. And so I got to learn how to do the 10 steps by pretty much using the same format as the big book has for the fourth step. And as we were doing the reading tonight, it stood out for me. One thing I'm surprised I never saw this before. But it turns out that the big book is saying that that's the way you're supposed to do it. He said, Bill says, we vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So we're doing the 10th step and the fourth step. The fourth step is being kind of an archaeological dig, and the 10th step is going to be a here and now thing, and dealing with the present tense. And that was really important for me, because when it came to the fourth step or the 10th step, that they're all written for me, that they're in those early days, it wasn't like I had the option of writing or not writing, so they were all written. And I think that there was a lot of a lot of healing that happened because it was down on paper, and that I got to read it to my sponsor, and I think that was an important element of it too, is that the understanding between me and my sponsor was that once I have it written, that I'm going to call her and I'm going to read it to her and get some feedback from her and that. And that was and that was just part of the process. I really didn't think that much about it, but I found out later that a lot of people didn't give their 10 steps away to their sponsors. They just did the writing, and I've done that too. I'm not going to say that I haven't, but I have done that too on occasion. But pretty much, if I go through the trouble of writing it, I'll usually run it by my sponsor and see what she thinks about it. And so that was my early thoughts on 10 as I was approaching it for the first time, or actually approaching the writing for the first time. And you know, later on, I when we got into the 12 and 12, the AA 12 and 12, I learned about spot check inventories. Which isn't, they are not written at all. The spot check inventories are really kind of realizations that I had, or we have as we're actually in the moment. And it allows me to really kind of observe my own behavior instead of getting caught up in the drama. And I know that some of you were around a couple of years ago when my I had this little corner of the property that I share with a couple of neighbors, and I took a couple of chairs and I put them out there, and there was a creek that ran through that corner of the property, and it was all very sheltered and had all these trees around it and bushes, and I could sit out there in those chairs that I had them chained to a tree, and I could sit there, and it was a real good meditation spot for me, and a prayer spot too. And so, and you could hear the birds. It was awesome. And one day, my neighbor decided to cut all those trees down, and I go down there, and they're all chopped down, and there's those two chairs that I sat in. They're all out there in the right in the wide open spaces, and I was not happy, and I saw myself, and this was, I guess it was kind of like a trial run on this thing, but I kept seeing myself in the a little bit from a distance, that not like I'm really caught up, like I was mad, and I was letting him know I was mad, but I wasn't cussing him out, I wasn't calling him names, I wasn't threatening him, I wasn't doing all the things I would have to make amends for. And I remember as I was going through this thing, and I was just, but I was beside myself. And after the dust had settled, I had realized that about less than a month before, for some ungodly reason, not ungodly, for some godly reason, I decided to make a video for sitting in that chair before it all got chopped down. And so I have this video that's about 3 or 4 minutes long. That beautiful spot with the creek and with the birds and everything, and it's and I realized that was kind of God given, letting me have a little bit of it anyway. So anytime I want to try experience that, instead of looking at the empty chairs over there when I drive by every day, and I'll just think about my little video and that the process of doing the writing, though, I think was really valuable for me, because the I guess what I get back to the incident where the guy did the cutting of the trees and that. So I have a I had this this thought that I had to remember the book of Jonah and the scripture that that Jonah has this big plant that's shading him, and the plant dies, and Jonah gets all ticked off at God, and God said, "Hey, that wasn't your plant." He said, "What are you getting mad at me for? You didn't plant it. You didn't make it grow." Is and I came to that conclusion. I was thinking, you know, maybe I'm supposed to go back and reread that. And even before I did, I was going to, but before I did, I had somebody from OA remind me of that chapter and verse from Scripture. And whenever that happens, whenever I have like a one of these places where God uses a highlighter to kind of emphasize something, I have to really pay attention, because that's really what's going on, is he's telling me that he wants me to look at it from that point of view, that this wasn't done to torture me, but it was something that was in the long run, it was good for me, that I got to learn restraint of pen and tongue. And you know, as a result of this, so what happened about I would say about 3 weeks later, I see my neighbor down at the market, and I noticed that he goes through great pains to avoid me, not even looking at me. And I said, he's got a real problem here, so with me. And I said, you know, I've got to look for an opportunity to do something about it. And so the opportunity came about a week later. He was stopped at the end of our driveway, and he was talking to our other neighbor. And I saw him there, and I just pulled up, and I just sat there and let him continue his conversation that he was in. And then after the other neighbor drove off, he turned around and started walking towards his house. And I hollered. I said, "Hey!" And he came, Richard. And he came over, and I said, "Are we okay?" And he was kind of shocked. I think he thought I was going to cuss him out some more. And he was just kind of taken aback. And he says, "Yeah, we're okay." And that was it, that I was able to get past that moment. And a big part of it was because of the 10th step, the ability for me to sit down and write that. And believe me, I wrote more than one page too. And then I would continually get these thoughts about, what am I going to do about it? Well, I'm going to call an attorney. So what would be my motive? Get even. Well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get a surveyor and make sure that he's not on my land. And what would be my motive? Get even. And so all of these thoughts kept coming to me, and as I examined them through this kind of a 10-step process, as I stopped and looked at what it was going on, they were all designed to get even. I was trying to find a way around this program, to find a loophole that allowed me to get even without having to make an amends. Never did find it, but that was and a something that was useful to me. And the other thing that was useful to me was to see how God operates so much in my life, that shortly before that, maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks before that happened, that Marilyn from Las Vegas, who goes to our morning meeting a lot of the time, and also was in the rooms when Georgia and I first started way back when, and but she had shared a mantra that she learned: "Bless them, change me. Bless them, change me. Bless them, change me." And I want to tell you that mantra saved me. Because I would just constantly, when my head was running amok, trying to find ways to get even with this guy, that I could just go, bless them, change me, bless them, change me. And so that was an example of God giving me the solution before the problem even happened. And that's not the first time he's done that for me. And so I really need to pay attention to those kinds of things. The 10th step, I think the writing part is so important because the purpose of the writing, according to my sponsor, and I've not run across anything that makes me challenge it, is to see the truth. And that the writing, if I haven't seen the truth by the time I get done, I get to ask myself, so what is the truth here? And the truth is usually that God's in charge, that this is something that nothing happens in God's world by mistake. That's what I learned from page 449 or 417. And that my job is to stay in God's world. How do I stay in God's world? I work the steps. I mean, what a better way to get in God's world and stay there. And so anyway, so I have everything I need. But I need to have the discipline to go ahead and do it. And that's what the 10th step is about, is really taking the time to look at my problems head on, not try to avoid them or evade them. There's no end runs in this program. The only way out is through, and that and I and the best way through is the 10th step. That's what it's designed for. And so I get to utilize that as even more, you know, it's a step, so it's more than a tool, but it has all of the has all of the earmarks of a tool because it is so effective and so useful. And the idea of the inventory, being able to look at it and then to work the steps. My sponsor always tells me that the best thing to way to handle my problems or just to turn my back on my problems and work the steps. That's going to be my quickest way through is going to be working the steps through there. And actually, that's a lot of her job as a sponsor is to show me how the steps apply in this in each particular thing that that comes up. In the tree cutting episode, I looked at it because it had been a long time since I had had a somebody pissed me off enough that I had to sit down and do a full-blown 10 step on it. And I'm thinking about it. It had been a long time, and I don't know how long, but it had been at least months. And I realized that this program kind of has moved my buttons. That people used to be able to push my buttons at will. They were pushing them right and left. That's why I was writing inventories every day. But as program as my program has taken hold, that they have to at first they had to step on their tiptoes. Now they got to get a short ladder to get up to where those buttons are, and this guy found the way up there for you know pretty quickly. But I grew because of it. I got to see the role of God in the whole thing, and I got to kind of make a backwards amends to go and let the guy come to a place of where he felt comfortable looking me in the eye when that's the promise of the program for me that I can look the world in the eye. And but that's another benefit of the 10th step, by the way, is that I have the opportunity to go any place in this world free of fear that I'm going to run across somebody that I don't want to run across. Because I've dealt with whatever the issue was during the during this period of time when when the anger you know kind of boiled up for me. So as we just like we did last week, I was going to say that this part of the book, as far as I'm concerned, this is the heart of the big book. This chapter into action and then working with others. And that there is just so much rich meaning in these chapters. And so I last week we looked at the promises of step I think we did the step nine promises. God's had tons of promises. Now we're in step 10, and so here are the step 10 promises. We're going to start on 84. We have entered into the world of the spirit, and that's a promise, and it's a truth that I don't live in man's world to the extent that I used to. Is that that I kind of have developed this this God consciousness, and it says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food. Wow. That's a pretty big one right there. And then what, we will seldom be interested in liquor. I'm going to say in food, at least only three times a day, I hope. And but it certainly is going to have a lot more sanity around it than it would before. For by this time, sanity will have returned. That's one of the promises there at the bottom of 84. And then, and I think another one is, if tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. And not so much tempted to, for me, to eat or even to overeat, but to binge, because I'm a binge eater. And when I came to program, I could not stop. I was binging. I'm going to say 24/7. That'd be a bit of an exaggeration, but let's just say all my waking hours were obsessed with food, either eating it or getting ready to eat it or planning on eating it. That was the my whole reason for living, basically. And it says that we will react sanely. Let's see if we can, and we'll find that this has happened automatically, that we didn't even cause it ourselves. And it says here that we are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. This is amazing. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality. You hear people talk about being in this place of neutrality, and it's not something you just hear rarely. You hear it a lot, that people that and they and sometimes it's seasons of neutrality that they'll and this has been my experience too, that it's been like seasons of neutrality where I'll go a long period of time where the food's not important to me at all. And then I'll get a long period of time of where I have to work my program, and it's really important for me to just recognize that. I had this Judy Hollis, who's probably one of the more famous OA people that she's written a lot of books. In fact, this one of her books was my textbook when I did my master's work. And that when and she had this this saying that if you can take it or leave it, you can have it. If you have to have it, you can't. That sounds really simple. And you can take it or leave it, you can have it. If you have to have it, you can't. So I'm still in my first marriage when I first heard it, and I'm going to dinner with my now ex-wife, or then ex-wife. She's passed away now, but we go out to dinner, and I'm telling her that it has been 3 years since I've had a piece of bread. And that bread had been one of my binge foods, is when I got the obsession lifted, it would be 3 years before I got had a piece of bread. So after 1 year, we were out to dinner, and I was telling her about if I can take it or leave it, I can have it. And I was saying, I think I can take it or leave it. And she said, well, then why don't you just leave it? And that never would have crossed my mind as a compulsive eater. But I saw that there was a lot of truth in what she said, because anybody can say anything. I can say I can take it or leave it, but unless I leave it, I haven't proved it. And so I decided that that's still a valid measuring stick of I can take it or leave it, I can have it. But I have to be honest about it. Can I really leave it? And sometimes I have to leave it just to prove it to myself that that I can. Some of the other promises up here on the page that that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or action on our part. That is the miracle of it. And I think that that's the important word there, the miracle of it, because those of us that are compulsive overeaters know that it takes a miracle to put us in this place of neutrality, to where, and even if the neutrality is just for one meal, if our meal has an end to it, if this meal has an end to it, that's a miracle. If you're a compulsive eater, like I'm a compulsive eater, that there's no telling that once I start eating it, I'm ever going to stop. And so we're, you know, we are just so blessed so many different ways in this program. And so then let's see, what else do I have here? Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. And if somebody had told me that that was going to be true at any point in time for me, I would have challenged it, because I had looked every place that I could look. I had hired the best people I could afford to hire to deal with my food problem, and they came up empty. And I come to OA, and after just a few meetings, I have the food obsession lifted. And what a huge miracle that is. And so anyway, so I'm being placed in this this place of not only being safe and protected, but as we get into the we're going to be in step 11 and 12 coming up, that that we're told, I think it's a step 12, that we're told that we can go anywhere on earth as long as our motives are right, and we're going to be safe and protected by our higher power. And I've gone to some sketchy places, and I have relied on that, and I do feel safe and protected when I do, as long as our motives are good, and we're there for a good reason. You know, for some reason, that, well, this is a long story, but when I did my four step, that one of the things that came out was that I had, and I think I may have shared it here before, but that I was really ducking out on my responsibility of visiting the sick in hospitals, that especially the people that in my family that were sick, and we had a genetic disease, and it was a terminal one. And luckily that my generation was skipped, but that wasn't true for my cousins and that. So I ended up making, as part of my living amends, was going to the hospital. Well, I thought I was just agreeing to do it for my relatives, but I wasn't. I was agreeing to do it, period. And I just had tons of guys that were in hospitals, or I would hear about somebody that was in hospital for, oh, being overweight and being morbidly obese or worse, and I would know that I had to go. And so I would go down, and I'd make these cold calls in hospitals. I didn't even know the guy's name, you know, just some big guy, you know. I hear he weighs 400 or 500 pounds. That's who I'm looking for, and they usually knew who he was, and that, and so that was. That was something that that I found myself having to go. I had one guy who was a street gangster, and I never would have met this guy. Our paths would not have crossed. And the guy was a street gangster, and I was going to see this guy every week. It was over in El Monte. I heard about him at the, I was at the El Monte meeting, and I heard about the guy, and I went over there, And you know, I actually we took meetings to him at the hospital. I think Stan was one of the guys who's still around that went with us over there. But we actually took meetings to him over there at the hospital. But the sad part of the story is that he never came out of the hospital. He died. He died in the hospital. He was only 32 years old. He weighed about 700 pounds. And
5 minutes.
okay. So anyway, so that's getting to that place. I'm just kind of maybe rambling a little bit, so step 10, that turns out to really be an important part of my recovery, because a lot of the growth came because of the truth that were being revealed, and little sections, this little thing here. I learned this part about me. I learned this part about me and something else that I wrote. And so that all of these different things added up to a place of where the seven step prayer says, we my creator, turn my will and my life over to good and bad. So that was basically it, good and bad. And that I got to a place of where I got to identify my shortcomings, and through the 10 steps, and I got to accept those things as being part of me. That I'm not only offering them to God, but I'm also recognizing them as being part of my character. And it doesn't make me a horrible person. It just makes me an imperfect human being, and just like everybody else. And that and learning how to come to a place of self-acceptance, and being willing to utilize those things to help me grow and to be a better person. And how many times has it been the stuff that I came up short with that has been the thing that God has used the most? And I think that in the I think probably the most dramatic example was that when I became a therapist, that I was horrible with couples, and I'd come out of a broken marriage, but my wife and I had divorced, and so the and here I was trying to be a therapist, and they put me in situations you have to be supervised and for their first 3,000 hours, thank God. And I would get in a situation, and these people would start fighting, and I'd think to myself, these guys need help. And I go, oh, shit, that's me. And so I'd say, what the heck, what am I doing here? And so the guys that ran the this place, they called me in, and they said, you're terrible with couples, and you're going to have to get a special supervisor for couples, your couples work, because, and you're going to pay for them yourself, because we supply a supervisor for your regular hours, but you're hopeless. And so I said, okay. So I get this guy, nice guy, and he had a lot of experience with couples and everything, but his style, I couldn't do his style of therapy. Yeah, it was too manipulative for me. I just wouldn't fit, and didn't fit for a program either, because you're trying to trick people. So who the hell wants to do that? And so it turns out that he kept telling me about that. This is his type of therapy, but he would say, there's this guy up in Washington. And the guy in Washington, turned out that he had started a study of newlywed couples that had gone that started in the mid 80s, and it turned out that he had the type of therapy that I really felt drawn to, and I became a specialist in that type of therapy. This guy became very, very famous. And that, and so as a result, as being one of the early people that have been certified, that took me 4 or 5 years to get certified. Wasn't a snap. And I became a specialist, and I was and so I was working with couples. That's where God took me. I had It would have been the last place I would have gone, but that's where he ended up taking me. And so on that, I'll close with this to just give you an idea of how important a program is right across the board. That I was they had invited me to come back after I retired to meet with a bunch of their interns that they had there, and talk to them about couples. And so I'm over there, and so then the director of this place says to me, "So what do you see as the basic thing that causes the most trouble with couples?" And I put down selfishness and self-seeking. Where does that come from? The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're also, and I said it with, without even a gap. I just said selfishness and self-seeking. And there's, ooh, wow, boy, that is so deep. And I'm just quoting the big book because it's so true in all our areas of our lives that this book is loaded with the truth. And I have this faith in the book that that what it says, when it has promises in there, you can bank on it because they're going to come true. And sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but they will come true. And it says, if we work for them. Thank you.